Chapter 15 Dreams Within a Dream. I stopped abruptly, brought perforce to a standstill. There was nothing but the black water heaving with the slow and dizzying motion in front of me, faintly illumined by a dim, pearly light like that of the waning moon. I looked behind me and saw that a thick mist filled the air and space, to the obliteration of everything that might otherwise have been visible. I had thought it was day, and that the sun was shining, but now it appeared to be night. Utterly fatigued in body and mind, I sank down wearily on the sand, close to the edge of the strange dark waters, which I could barely see. The quiet and the deep obscurity had a lulling effect on my senses, and I thought languidly how good it would be if I might be allowed to rest where I was forever. I can understand, I said to myself, why so many people long for death and pray for it as a great blessing. They have lost love, and without love life is valueless. To live on and on through cycles of time in worlds that are empty of all sweetness, to live companionless and deprived of hope and comfort, this would be not heaven but hell. Hell, not heaven, said a voice near me. I started and looked up. A shadowy figure stood beside me, that of a woman in dark trailing garments, whose face, in the dim light surrounding us both, shone with a pale beauty. So you have found your way here at last, she said gently, here where all things end and nothing begins. I rose to my feet and confronted her. Where all things end? I repeated. Surely where life exists, there is no end. She gave me a fleeting smile. Life is a dream, she said, and our own little lives are but dreams within the dream. There is no realities. You imagine truths where there is nothing but deception. I looked at her in wonder and bewilderment. She was beautiful, and the calm sadness of her eyes expressed compassion and tenderness. Then is creation itself a lie? I asked. She made no immediate answer, but pointed with one hand toward the dark water. I looked and uttered a cry of ecstasy, for there, shining in the heaving blackness like a vision, was the dream, glittering from stem to stern with light that sparkled like millions of diamonds. Your dream of love, said the woman beside me. Behold it for the last time. With straining eyes and beating heart, I watched and saw the shining vessel begin to sink slowly into the deep, watery blackness, down, down still lower, till only her masts were visible. Then something defiant and forceful sprang up within me. I would master this torture, I thought. I would not yield to the agony that threatened to drive me utterly to despair. This is a phantom of sorrow, I said. It has no meaning. The love that is in my heart is my own. It is my life, my soul, my innermost being. It is eternal as God Himself, and to Him I commend it. I spoke these words aloud, holding the book, The Secret of Life, clasped to my breast, and raised my eyes trustfully to the dense darkness that should have been the sky. Then I felt the woman's hand on mine. Her touch was warm and gentle. Come, she said softly. And I saw a small boat slip out into the gloomy water, guided towards me by one whose face was hidden by a fold of black. My companion drew me with her and signed to me to enter. Something in myself, as well as in her looks, impelled me to obey, and as she stepped into the boat, I followed. We were borne along in silence for what seemed to me a long time, until suddenly I began to hear strange sounds of wailing and shuddering cries of appeal, and the darkness was lightened by the drifting to and fro of pale forms, luminous and human in shape, though scarcely human in resemblance. "What are these?" I whispered. My companion took my hand and held it. "Listen," she answered. And gradually, out of a clamor of weeping and complaint, I heard voices uttering distinct sounds. "I am the phantom of wealth," said one. "For me, men and nations have rushed to their destruction. For me, they have sacrificed happiness and missed the way to God. For me, innocence has been betrayed and honor slain. I am but a shadow, yet the world follows me as though I were the light. I am but the gold dust of earth, and men take me for the glory of heaven." "I," said another, "am the phantom of fame. I come with music and sweet promises. I float before the eyes of men, seeming to them an angel. I speak of triumph and power. For me, brave hearts have been broken, and bright spirits doomed to despair. I am but a shadow, but the world holds me as substance. I am but a breath and a shade, but men take me for a fixed star." "I," said another, "am the phantom of pride. For me, humanity scales the height of ambition. For my sake, kings and queens occupy uneasy thrones and surround themselves with pomp and panoply. For me, men lie and cheat and wrong their neighbors. For me, homes that should be happy have been laid to waste. For me, false laws are made, and evil is allowed to conquer good. I am but a shadow, but the world takes me for the sun itself. I am but a passing flash of light, but men take me for the perfect day." Other voices joined in and echoed wildly around me. I rose up in the boat, loosing my hold from the clasp of the woman who was with me. "You are phantoms, all," I cried, only half conscious of my words. "I want God's angels. Where is love?" The voices ceased. The strange flitting figures wailing around me faded into mist and disappeared, and a light, deep and golden and wonderful, began to shine through the gloom. My companion spoke. "We have been looking at dreams," she said. "You ask for what is real." I smiled. A sudden inrush of strength and authority possessed me. "You bade me look my last upon my dream of love," I said. "But you knew that was impossible, for love itself is not a dream." The golden radiance widened into a perfect splendor, and our boat now glided over a shining sea. As in a vision, I saw the figure that steered and guided the boat change from darkness to brightness. The black fold fell from her face. Angel eyes looked at me. Angel lips smiled. And then I found myself suddenly alone on the shore of a little bay, blue as a sapphire in the reflection of the blue sky above it. The black stretch of water, which had seemed so dreary and impassable, had disappeared. And to my astonishment, I recognized the very shore near the rock garden immediately beneath my turret room. I looked everywhere for her who had been in the boat with me, for the boat itself and its guide, but there was no trace of them. Where I had wandered and how far was more than I could imagine. Presently, however, regaining my nerve and courage, I began to think that perhaps my strange experience had been preordained and planned as a test of my faith and fortitude. Had I failed? Surely not, for my doubts of God's love had been only fleeting and had been overcome. Never would I doubt the power of that love. There was only one thing which puzzled me, the memory of those voices behind a wall. I could not quite rid myself of the anxiety that they might be real. I knew and felt that, after all, it is the voices of the world around us that do us the greatest damage, and that neither poverty nor sorrow can destroy felicity if we will strongly to hold on to our inner joy. And yet, I still allowed myself to feel vaguely uneasy on their account, and could not entirely regain my former composure. The door of the winding stair leading up to my room in the turret stood open, and I availed myself of this tacit permission to return to my room. I found everything as I had left it. The walls around me were solid, and there was no sign of an opening anywhere. I sat down by my window to think. There before my eyes was the sea, calm and irradiated by the brilliant sun. No mysterious or magic art suggested itself in the visible scene of a smiling summer day. Had I been so long absent from this room, I wondered? I could not tell. Time seemed to have been annihilated, and as far as I myself was concerned, I desired nothing in this world or the next, save to know that God still loved me, and that Rafael Santoris still lived. All the past, present, and future hung on those two questions. I had nothing more to hope for or to attain. If I had lost the love of Santoris, then God himself could give me no comfort, for my essential link with him was broken. Gradually a great and soothing quietude stole over me, and the cloud of depression that had been hanging over my mind began to clear. I thought of my recent experience with the angel who had seemed to spurn me, of the man and woman who brought me comfort, then of the woman in the boat and all those phantom figures. Surely I had been subject to hallucinations. Why should I doubt? I had placed my book, The Secret of Life, on the table on re-entering my room. Now I took it up again, and it fell open at the following passage. When once you possess the treasure of love, remember this: every effort will be made by the powers of darkness themselves to snatch it away from you. There is nothing that the world envies so much as a happy soul. Those who have been your dearest friends will turn against you, because you have a joy in which they do not share. They will join hands with your foes to drag you down from your height of paradise. The powers of the coarse and the commonplace will be arrayed against you. Shafts of disdain and ridicule will be hurled at your tenderest feelings. Venomous lies and cruel calumnies will be circulated concerning you in an attempt to draw you from your circle of light into a world of chaos and darkness. If you would stand firm, you must become strong enough to stand firm within the center of a whirlwind. If you would maintain the inner balance of your soul, you must preserve that balance even while in movement. The deathless essence of yourself must be kept under steady control, like a well-disciplined army. Otherwise, the disintegrating forces set up by the malign influences around you will attack not only your happiness, but your health and your strength, and will murder your inner peace. Love is the only glory of life. Love is the heart and pulse of all things. Love is a possession denied to Earth's greatest conquerors. It is a talisman which opens all the secrets of nature. Love is a divinity whose power is limitless, and whose benediction bestows in life all beauty, all sweetness, all joy. Bear this in mind and never forget how such a gift is grudged by those who have it not to those who have it. Reading thus far, a light began to break upon me. Had not all the weird and inexplicable experience of the past hours or days tended to shake me from love and destroy my allegiance to the highest ideals I cherished? And had I yielded to the temptation? Had I failed? I dare not try to estimate either my failure or success. Leaving my place at the window, I saw that the little lift or dresser in the wall had come up noiselessly with its usual daintily prepared refection of fruit and bread, deliciously cool spring water, and cool milk. I had felt neither hunger nor thirst during my strange voyage through unknown places, but now I was quite ready to eat and enjoyed my meal with all the zest of an unspoiled appetite. When I had finished, I returned to my precious book, and placing it on the table, propped my head between my two hands and set myself resolutely to studying it. I wrote down here the passages I read exactly as I found them, for those who care to practice the lessons they teach. Free will. Free will is not the ability to do what one wants. For what is it that determines those wants? Our actions of the past. Our will is free only to turn toward God or to reject Him. The potentials of will, however, are practically limitless. They are hindered by the effects of our past actions. But by exercising our willpower resolutely, we can to a great extent determine our own success in life and mold our own destiny. The will can command all things, save only love. For love is of God, and God is not subject to authority. Love must be born in the soul and of the soul. Love alone is free. Eternal life. Life is eternal. It cannot die. Everything that lives now must live forever. What is called death is, by the fact that all comes from God, impossible. Life changes perpetually, but it never changes in essence. Every soul imprisoned in human form today has lived in other forms before. Each individual preserves his individuality and, to that extent at least, its memory. It is permitted to remember a few of the million incidents and episodes of the past, if only as present tastes and inclinations. But most such memories remain buried within the person's consciousness, that he may be free to evolve ever further without discouraging memories from the past. When one reaches the supreme heights of spirituality and is strong enough to know, to see, and to understand, then will he remember everything from the beginning. Nothing is or ever can be forgotten. Every thought is preserved, every word, every sigh, every tear is kept on record.